Hey, welcome to Driven by Design, the only show that shows you the future of automotive design, one conversation at a time, with our driven designer, Brian Thompson. Hey,
howdy,
Brian.
Howdy. Howdy, how are you?
Today we're going to talk about what drives you. And there's a philanthropy project that you have undertaken here that I find fascinating and that others who listen to this show might want to participate. Tell us a little bit about the backstory of what this is you've created and why.
Yeah, one of the exciting things about this podcast is sort of telling people's stories, right?
Yeah,
so
right.
Today we'll tell mine.
Right.
I've been a car designer for 2 decades, 20 years now. As I've gone through this industry that I love, I'm really interested in finding some way to give back. So I created a car design scholarship for LGBTQ design students.
Right.
And it's managed through Art Center College of Design and College for Creative Studies.
And where's that at, for those that don't know?
For sure. Art Center is based in Pasadena, California.
Right.
And College for Creative Studies is in Detroit, Michigan. And they've helped me establish the fund, and we are in the process of fundraising and establishing a selection committee. It's really cool.
And those are the two schools, correct me if I'm wrong, where more car designers come out of than anywhere else. Because this isn't a field, even within the field of design, there are those who do cars, and they're sort of a separate tribe. They don't fit the confines of the traditional industrial art design program. True. I mean,
yeah.
LGBT or not, you guys are a unique breed of cat.
We always say that. Yeah, we are kind of a funny tribe within that, and then being gay on top of that is another tribe within it. A tribe within a tribe.
But you know, right.
Car design is such an interesting field. You do have to go to special school for it. There's actually three schools really recognized in America: Academy of Art in San Francisco, where my mentor Tom Montano teaches, College for Creative Studies, and then Art Center College of Design. And they really do. They teach obviously all sorts of fields, but they really are the preeminent car design schools that the actual car industry hires their talent from.
Now that's not where you went originally, though. You went to Arizona State, was it?
I did, and that is part of the story. I went to Arizona State studying architecture, and I ended up dropping out of Arizona State. I think the seeds for this scholarship were planted at that moment.
Right, exactly. So talk about that, because they made you feel like, well, I don't know what he's doing here, but it doesn't fit what we do.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, and the reason I created the scholarship for car designers specifically is this story. So when I was studying architecture, there is a sensibility to car design that a car designer has that an architect and a product designer don't have. That's not taking anything away from their talent. It's just that cars are so much focused on surface and proportion, and they're almost like fine arts within a corporate structure, meaning with the way cars are designed. And there is a very special skill set and talent to be a car designer. Now, what I see and what I experienced firsthand was that a lot of students that have this special skill, if they're being taught by a product designer or an architect, they may be misled to believe that they will never make it as a designer because they don't think cerebrally enough, or they're not great at mathematics, or they're not thinking in very logical terms. But that's not what car design is about. Car design is emotion, and it's fiery, and it's passionate. And so this happened to me. I remember going to talking to a guidance counselor about why I was struggling in this field of architecture to create things that felt like cars. And they told me, you know, hey, you know, car design is pipe dream. Every young man comes through here.
Sexy, it's fun, but let it go. Okay, nobody does that. Yeah.
Also, you really need to buckle down and learn these skills. And what it turned out is that was absolutely wrong advice. And something kicked in my brain, and I dropped out of college. I moved to France. I had like remedial French lessons, and I moved to France, met a guy in a bar. He let me live in a trailer outside of his shop. He was a mechanic. And I proceeded to go to every car design studio I could find in Europe and knock on the door.
Yeah, literally knock on the door until somebody would come out. Right.
Literally knock on the door and say, how do you become a car designer? You know, it was at Fiat in Torino, Italy, that a man named Peter Davis was the design director at the time. And he stopped what he was doing that day, and I can only imagine he was very busy. He already had Alfa Romeo, Fiat, and Lancia under his command.
And there's some kid outside that wants to talk to you about his dream here.
Yep, exactly. so again, you know, planting the seeds for this, he changed my life. He told me where to go to school and how to become a car designer. And I ended up going to Art Center College of Design in Switzerland and then College for Creative Studies in Detroit. At that time, Art Center had a campus in Switzerland. And I'll tell you what, when I got there, I realized this entire time, this feeling of misfit vaporized. I had found my tribe. I was with people that had this skill set to design cars. And, you know, I think in life, there are these moments where you go along and somebody approaches you needing help, and you either turn right and you focus on yourself, or you turn left and you go, you know what, I'm going to take a moment here and help this person. And I think everybody who's ever done anything significant has that story.
I agree.
Somebody stopped what they were doing. I can only imagine what Peter had going on that day, right? Me coming in there, this dirty kid. I know I slept on a park bench that night before. Like, I was that broke. So I couldn't have smelled very good, right? And so, like, he just saw something, and he spent the day with me that changed my life.
He took the time. He took a chance. Let me tell you a really funny story, a quick aside here. It has nothing to do with the car business, but at the radio station, we get interviewed all sorts of celebrities and whatnot. And an old 80s superstar, I'm of the age, I remember the 80s here, came through town here, Gino Vannelli. You'd have to go Google him, look him up. Lots of big hits, romantic pop melodies in the 80s here. And he told his story, which is much like yours, how he got discovered back in the 70s. He's a kid from Montreal, didn't know anybody in the business, had a dream, had a stack of songs he'd written, and he came to Hollywood. And of course, like the Hollywood story goes, nobody would listen to him.
Yeah.
Knocked on every door, and he's down to his last $5, literally. And he's broke, and he's going to get back on the bus tomorrow with his tail between his legs and go back home. And I say, I guess I'm never going to live this dream. I thought it was for real. And he literally says, like the song, The Mamas and the Papas, California Dream. And he went into a church, and he began to pray. And the prayer hit him, go and try and break into A&M Records and see if you can meet the great Herb Albert, the impossible dream. So he stood outside all day, 8 hours outside the studio gates, and they keep saying, you got to get out of here, kid. And if you try and run through here, we're going to arrest you. I know, I got it. And as soon as he saw Herb Albert walk out into the parking lot, he darted in, ran up to him, and as the guards had dragged him, he said, please, Mr. Albert, would you listen to this? And the guy stopped and said, okay, let him go, guys. And gave him 2 minutes, and 2 weeks later, he was signed to A&M Records with Karen Carpenter and Joe Cocker and The Police and all these other people. I mean, it's that kind of passion. Yeah. And I tell that story because that's your story, and I don't think people believe those stories. Oh, yeah, one in a million. But to have that kind of desire, to be that driven to do something, is an amazing quality. Maybe that's what it takes to succeed.
Well, and I think, you know, it's the drive, it's the timing, it's, you know, sometimes it's dumb luck, but it's also, you have to have the talent to back it up. You know,
yes, I think that's what he said. When he got his couple moments, he said, I've been working all my life for this. So I had my 2 minutes to get in front of the guy. I had to be ready.
You had to be ready. And, you know, and I had like a little portfolio of cars I drew. And you know, and it was amazing what Peter told me. He said, you're going to apply to this school. This is where you go. And he said, and don't draw cars. He said, they're going to teach you to draw cards. You go back and you draw people.
Yeah, you said that. I never. Yeah, right. Because cars are about people, as we've said on the show. It's something you put on. It's a personality that you associate with your own personality. I'm this car. This car is me come to life. It's the personification of what I see myself as. Well, I think that the purpose, that when you told me the story that you're going to do this scholarship and you're doing it with these schools, not only your story of how you felt, I didn't know where I belonged, not just because you're in a small town and you're gay, but because you're an even crazier dream that you're going to be a gay kid from a small town that's going to somehow design cars. I mean, everything stacked against you, everybody telling you from the beginning, this can't happen, Brian. It doesn't happen to people like you.
Right? Sure, I remember the, and I think a lot of people hear that story that you're dreaming too high, get off your high horse.
So for a lot of people, they're just told, for a lot of reasons, they can never belong to this car design tribe. And your message is?
Yeah, you can. And it's even a little more than that, because it's basically telling people, you know, that something is innately not right, or and it's that sort of ugly duckling story where the people telling you are only telling you it because they themselves don't have it.
Yeah.
And so
right.
what you
right.
learn, you know, you learn going through this is that this is a special field, and when you do get into it, it's like, oh my God, this is my tribe. This is the people I wanted to be with. And so, you know,
and you said that when finally somebody listened to you and looked at the work you'd put together, even though your previous professors had kind of dismissed it and said, you ain't got it. Somebody looked at it and said,
exactly.
they're wrong. You got it.
Yeah,
they're the ones missing it. Yeah.
Well, then even they, you know, they weren't even relevant. It was a wonderful feeling to know that, you know, this sort of struggle or sort of determination I had, it actually, there was an intuition there that was correct, that there is this thing called card events, very special. I applied to the school. He said I got in, you know, and I became a car designer.
Yeah,
and I,
right.
And, you know,
you succeeded where people had told you you couldn't. So let me ask you a hard question here. There are kids out here who would love to be in, who would love to emulate you, who would love to be a car designer. They feel the calling like you did. They think they have the talent and skills and interest to like you felt you did. Is this an industry that welcomes diversity? Because I got to be honest, and I hope this doesn't offend you or any of your listeners, but I grew up in the car business. It's a macho, at least it was in the 60s and 70s when I was there, and my parents, my dad worked for it, and everybody's dad worked for it. It was a macho kind of business, and I don't think they would welcome LGBT contributors any more than they'd welcome women or minorities or anybody else. This was a guy's culture, a guy's club.
You know, the industry is changing, and I've watched the change. You know, I've seen it change a lot in 2 decades. But it's a beautiful industry where you have people creating these amazing products, you know, that move us, you know, both physically and emotionally.
Yes, right.
But I did see that, spending the time in it, not only for anybody that was not in,
especially in Detroit where I grew up. I mean, it was just, this was a guy's club, macho. Horsepower, racing, yeah. Building cars, engineers, all these things that you just, you instantly get a picture of a white male guy doing these things, right?
Well, growing up, I didn't really understand that being gay was even anything other than like the color of my hair.
Yeah.
Right. So I was grateful that I had that going for me. You know, but I know that when I got into the industry, you know, there were some moments where I would see women put into a corner or gay people put into a corner and a lot of and I saw
African Americans, anybody that didn't fit that image of what a car guy was. Yeah, right.
Yeah, and I got sort of inspired by, I'd have these conversations with car designers that would want to reveal their sexuality to me because I was just so openly out all
yeah,
the time anyway.
Right, right.
That I didn't want to out them, but I had an empathy thinking this shouldn't be how they feel. This shouldn't be how they feel. And I remember there was a moment at a design review at a major car company that I designed for, where an executive came into the design studio and we had the viewing court, and we were working on a futuristic model. And then for some context, we had some vintage vehicles in the studio. And I'll never forget the executive looked at a Datsun, an old Datsun from the 70s, and said, "Well, that's a faggot's car." And
God.
I looked at him and something came over me. And I very quietly, I walked over and I took his coat sleeve and I said, "Will you come chat with me for a minute?" And I said to him, and I was terrified, right? Because this guy he was way above me on the ranks. And I said, "You know, you have to understand something here. People look to you to set the tone of the culture of this studio. And what you just said," let me back up. I took his coattail and I said, "First of all, I want to say that was my car and I'm gay."
Yeah.
And
right.
then people,
are you talking about me, sir? Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, no, well, it wasn't confrontational. It was very soft spoken. And I said to him, "You have to understand that you people look to you to set the tone of what the culture of this design studio is going to be." And in that comment, you just made it okay for homophobia to exist. And it creates a very dangerous precedent. With all due respect, I think that it would do wonders if you apologize to this group and take that comment back. And there was a moment where we looked at each other.
I'll bet.
It was beating out of my chest. And you know, to his credit, it was a moment of non-thinking. And he went back and he said, "I never should have said that. That was not something I should have." He apologized to the group.
Wow.
And we went on and it was forgotten. And I just, in that moment, I thought, you know, you can be empowered. You don't have to be violent. You don't have to be disrespectful.
Good for you.
You can voice your voice in a moment like that. And maybe in the way that, you know, who knows why he said yes. Maybe he had a moment of thoughtlessness, or maybe it was that I didn't, you know, sort of embarrass him in that moment. And,
yeah,
I'll tell you what, it really inspired me to, that sort of was the seed of this fund that I'm created is sort of coming to full.
It tells young Brians of the world that there can be a place for you at this table, even though others tell you, or even though you might tell yourself, I can't be here. And whatever you think that limiting belief is, you seem to have a whole bunch of them. You came from a small town. I wouldn't think a little small town kid would ever think he could get and design for a big car company. Come on, just don't happen, Brian. Come on. You know, we don't do that around here. And
I was also very lucky to have, I had a grandma who would lay me on the bathroom floor while she'd do her hair, and she would imagine the world that I was going to design cars in. And so I'm always very grateful because I had that. That was like, you know, meditation before Eckhart Tolle and Oprah were selling it. It was like, you know, manifesting my future. So
you're from a small town, you're gay, and then you're also trying to get into this just by knocking on doors and not coming. Your professors are saying, give up, kid, you ain't got it. You know, this is like everybody, the universe is lining up trying to tell you, and you're like, no, what, why is everybody saying this? I've got it. I want it. I can do it. And now you're telling others, if you've got that determination and drive, then do it.
I think there's something in you that you know, if you're born to sing, you know, you're going to sing. If you're born to act, you're going to act. If you're born to create public policy, that's what you're going to do. And I was born to create car design. I just was.
Right.
I knew it before I knew what the job was. And I know that there are kids out there in, you know, in this country and, you know, around the world that have that same energy and that sort of bubbling up sensation, and they have the talent to back it, and they just need to be reached. And so,
that's
what we're doing.
And look at the car business today too. I you know, even more so than the 60s and 70s when my dad, these big rough tough guys that were engineer types, that were car guys, that loved to work on cars and loved to drive fast and all that image that came with the romance of working in the car business here. But who did they sell the cars to? They sold them to little old ladies. They sold them to gay car designers. They sold them to single women. They sold them to every ethnicity on the planet here, more so than ever. This is a global product. You're selling a suit for everybody. And if you only make a suit in one color, like Henry Ford did, you can get it in any color you want as long as it's black, you know, you're limiting your potential sales. The whole world wants a car. The whole world wants to be moved.
The world wants to be moved. That's a really nice way to put it. And the industry is changing. You know, that's what we talk about a lot in this podcast, is how much the industry is changing to, you know, niche level creativity, where you're going to see more creativity, not less of it.
Yes,
As these sort of production processes come along that allow for that. But yeah, we could dive into
It's not one size that fits all anymore here. It's trying to adapt, offer something for everybody. And we've come to realize in the world, much to our credit, that the world is much bigger than the world of white Anglo-Saxon males that dominated the car business for 100 million years.
It's so cool to see these younger kids that come into the industry, and they just see the world so differently than, you know, I'm 45. These kids come in and they see the world so differently than even I did. Like, you know, just the way they imagine and create is so different than the way that I did when I was a young man. But that spark of talent is there. It's always that talent.
Can I tell you one? Now you're going to get me to reveal here something. So my father was an executive with Chrysler Corporation. And his whole life, his secret, his ugly secret, wasn't that he was gay, wasn't that he was African-American or whatever. He was a poor Polack from the wrong side of the tracks, and had started off on the assembly line when he was 18. Then he went off and fought World War II. And came back and said, I'm not going back in the factory, even though all his relatives are there. And in Detroit, the Poles were the dumb Polacks that worked in the factories. Mm. So all his relatives did. Because his father didn't have a Polish name, he was half Polish, he hid the fact he was Polish. And for my whole life, we were forbidden to tell anybody that we were half Polish. And in fact, one time he took a bunch of car executives down into the shop floor to walk them through the factory. And there was his uncle working on the line, slapping tires and he was too embarrassed to go up and talk to him. He shunned him and couldn't admit that he knew this guy on the shop floor. So this takes many forms, my friends here, this feeling that you have to conform and be like them. Be who you are, and you will find your passion and purpose in life. Don't be like my dad and be a closeted Pollock his whole life here.
Well, over time, he learned. I mean, I'm sure he told that story as a learning.
Yeah.
So that's right. I mean, and I think that's, you know, a big part of, you know,
he was ashamed of who he was, and he thought that somehow if he revealed who he was, he would be kicked out of this club that somehow had let him participate.
For fear.
Yeah. Right.
Being kicked out of the club. But, you know, the world is changing. I think there's, you know, when you embrace all the different types of people, you get all the different types of creativity, right? So
exactly. But that's the beauty of what we're doing here. Well, and these are worldwide car companies now. So why wouldn't they have every color, every voice, every part of the rainbow there? Because they're designing suits for everybody here. Well, I think it's phenomenal what you're doing. Now, this, if people want to learn more about this, is just being put together. Now you have a fundraiser coming up this week for those listening this week. In Palm Springs, tell us about that.
So we've raised about $10,000 this year. When the last year, the momentum has kind of been pretty cool to see people respond to this. We are having a really fun fundraiser at the Liberace State this Friday.
Liberace's Estate, okay. Just worth going in and of itself. I bet that's wildly over the top here. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be so much fun. And we have a chef coming in from San Francisco. Where I've donated one of my own vehicles.
They can win a real car here, right?
Uh huh. Yeah, and we'll have an auctioneer there and dinner, dancing, very 70s themed. It's October 18th this Friday from 7 to 11 p.m. at the Liberace Estate, and people can get tickets on Eventbrite by searching Palm Springs Events, or they just simply can go to my Instagram account. It's All About It Right Now, which is my name,
right?
Brian S. Thompson. That's BryanS Scott Thompson, Thompson. That profile, in the profile, is an active link to get your tickets. And I'll tell you what, it's going to be a fun event. We're going to raise some good money, and the money, like I said, goes straight to the school. It already has a placeholder.
And they're going to provide the panel. They're going to judge who gets the fund, and this will help support kids that otherwise might not be able to afford these schools or might not think they could get in.
Exactly. That's what it's all about. Yep.
Well, Brian Thompson did it. You can too here. You know, my dad, the little Pollock working from the factory, made it into the upper ranks and tried to hide it, who he was, his whole life here. Don't hide it. Be who you are. There is a room. There is a seat at the table. I think the car business is changing dramatically, and it's not just the male.
Talent first, right?
Yeah, right.
Talent is first.
Talent is first, really. Talent. My dad was very talented at what he did at sales, and they knew it. He was very successful at it. So, you know, rely on your talent. And there is a tribe out there waiting for you to join, right? It might be a weird tribe. It might be a little strange. It might be a tribe that everybody else doesn't understand. I think car people march to their own tune. I really do. I think not just, the designers of the world, the whole car business. I grew up in the belly of the beast. I grew up in Detroit. Everybody's father, mother, brother worked somewhere. They either worked in the factories, or they worked for the suppliers, or they worked for the car companies. It was a more than any other industry, maybe other than the Hollywood, it's that kind of feeling. Everybody felt they were doing something big and cool, and everybody was excited to be part, maybe the space program or something. There are a few things like this that come to mind like that. The car business is one of them.
Yeah, and like I said, before, it's changing as well. The Silicon Valley startups are just really giving the OEMs a run for their money. But that, again, is a part of another podcast. I hope people will come out. You can also donate directly to the fund, and that information is also on my Instagram account.
Okay, on Instagram. So give it one more time. Just go to Instagram, and they can actually see your design, because you have a pretty big Instagram. That's a place where your tribe hangs out here.
No, I obviously don't share any of the confidential work I'm doing, because that's all in the future. But I've got car restorations and, all sorts of cool, fun stuff. But, yeah, my name, Brian S. Thompson. And then also my website, Brian Thompson Design. There's links to the work and to the fundraiser.
Every time you give me your email, I always think of, I'm from that era where Hunter S. Thompson, the gonzo journalist, wrote. And I always thought it was, because he always had to say it wasn't Hunter Thompson, it was Hunter S. Thompson. So it's Brian S. Thompson. And like him, you're living it. You're out there, you're not just writing about it. You're living it. You're right in the, we're experiencing it along with you here.
You've also just made me realize that me and my brother are both named after Hunter S. Thompson, because his name is Chad Hunter Thompson.
Is it really? See, there you go. Yeah. Your parents probably knew that. Well, Hunter Thompson was just
no idea.
Iconic, writer who wrote experientially. He couldn't just write about doing drugs if he wasn't doing them himself, so he had to go in and experience the whole counterculture thing for himself and write it from the inside out. That's what you're doing with this podcast. You're telling us from an insider's perspective what's going on in the industry and how it's changing and evolving here.
Yep, absolutely.
All right.
It's a wonderful place to work and live.
Well,
all right.
I,
well, listen, thank you so much. This has been a blast.
It has been. I understand now why you're driven by design and why you're driven to help others here. So good luck with both, and come on back and tell us more of these stories right here on Driven by Design.